Hello and welcome. Today I'm here with the three co-founders of Brood Games. Brood Games has recently launched a Souls-like action platformer game on Steam called Winds of Arcana Ruination. Today we speak with the founders about one, the history and origin of their game studio. Secondly, the challenges of building an indie game studio out of India. And third, more about their game, Winds of Arcana, and the launch of their game. Today's episode is sponsored by Data.ai. To access estimates for rankings, downloads, revenue, usage, or engagement for millions of apps on the App Store and Google Play, sign up for Data.ai. Welcome, guys. So I thought we could go ahead and jump right in and have you guys talk a little bit more about who is Brood Games and more about this game, Winds of Arcana Ruination.
Happy to do so. Thank you for having us, firstly. I'm Mahesh. And we also have here Prashant and Yashasvi. We're three co-founders of four co-founders of Brood Games. And we're an indie gaming studio set up in Bangalore, India. We're an 8-person team. And we're currently working on our very first PC game called Winds of Arcana Ruination. It's a 2.5D Souls-like action platformer. It's out on Steam right now. The demo's out. And it's really fun and really difficult.
That's great to hear. And maybe even just talking more about the origin of this game, if we can kind of back up and have you guys talk about how did the game originate in terms of the idea? How did you guys kind of come together and build the team? It'd be great to hear more about that.
Sure. I'm Yashasvi. Mm-hmm. The story is it's quite a long story, but I'll just keep it brief. So me and Prashant, we've been working together for 13 years or more. I'm not sure exactly. But we started in a company called Atman Software. Before that, we just, by happenstance, we joined this institute called Asian Institute of Design, which is it used to be called as Asian Institute of Gaming and Animation in Bangalore. So there we did game art, a course on game art. So we became friends and we started working together in a company called Atman Software. That was not a gaming studio, but the reason we joined, like all of our colleagues were working in gaming studios, but they joined gaming studios, but we wanted to join there because that was a company run by one person, was only one of the only few people who had built a game engine, made his own games, and he's been doing it for 25 years now. So we wanted to be part of that journey. So we thought, okay, the idea was, we'll try to make something that would generate revenue, then make a game. So Prashant worked there for, 3.5 years. I worked there for 6 years. Then we moved on to a different company. And again, spent a couple of years. And again, we worked together in the same company. Then at the end of it, see, we always wanted to make games, but we never really got that opportunity because we had already been in this parallel industry and having worked in a different industry, which uses the same tech essentially, but it's not making games, right? It's very difficult to get into mainstream gaming at that level, right? Either you start fresh or you just don't get in. It's very difficult. So we found it a little too difficult to join a established studio. Because of lack of experience making games. Yeah. But we badly wanted to make games for a long time, over a decade. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason one day we decided, hey, let's just do it ourselves, right? This was just after COVID, after the first wave. So we put down our papers and we just...
That thing that he's just describing, all three of us, not in the best... space, I guess. We're like, what are we doing really? What projects should we work on where we get a positive reward from completing it? Because there were so many proof of concepts or like demos, but we never got the experience of doing something from scratch and something finished that sees the light of day. So that was our, like, our careers were always like they were getting stopped due to factors out of our control.
Right.
And I think finally one day he got frustrated enough. He was like, no one is going to give me a job because I've not made a game before. So I'll do it. No matter how long it takes, I'll do it. It's fine. If you guys are interested, you can join me. Regardless, I'm going to make a game. So
that's
me,
great.
Yeah.
So a lot of the motivation was you wanted to see a project come to fruition from start to end.
Yeah.
And you guys had worked together before. But
yeah.
What about the other two co-founders? And then there, you said there were, I think there's 8 people in the company, right?
Yeah.
So how did the other employees join the company?
Okay. Right now it's just me and Prashant here, but the third co-founder, who is not Mahesh, but another one,
yeah.
Naveen. So he also... we worked together same 13
okay.
years, so the same history, blah blah blah.
Got it.
So it was the three of us that initially we put down a paper, like, you know,
yes.
Mahesh had already moved on from the previous company. He was also working in the same company.
Yeah.
Okay.
Strangely enough, but he had left, I think, a few months.
Yeah,
before
I'd left a year before you guys left.
Yeah.
I think.
So he's working somewhere else.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that. And when we started, it was not about, you know, starting a game studio. It was just about making a game.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we had no clue
yeah.
what we wanted to do. So I just put down our papers, like, you know. We started, in fact, with making, I thought we'll make a Max V game.
Yeah.
We still have a video of that.
Yeah.
And we were just discussing about, you know, what's the easiest thing we can do.
Right.
It was either have some sort of casual or hyper-casual game. You know, started prototyping things, you know, started playing a lot of mobile games, like a lot. We are not mobile gamers.
Yeah.
We are mostly PC gamers, you know, all sorts of PC games. So once we got a few ideas, I mean, we played a lot of games, we got a few ideas, we started working on them. I mean, this very early, then Mahesh happened.
Yeah, it's also interesting how he tried.
Yeah.
He was like, I will do anything.
I just heard that these guys are doing this, that they're starting a gaming-related project.
Yeah.
And I've been a gamer since I was 5 years old.
Okay.
And as soon as I heard about this, I'm like, just let me do anything. I will write the menu. I'll do any. I'll make social media posts. I'll just let me be a part of this. I just want to be part of this.
Well, that's awesome. Sounds like there's a lot of passion here.
Yeah.
This
We were in an office slightly smaller than this room right here.
Okay.
And when he joined, we didn't have space. So we literally got 2 feet.
It was an end table.
Yeah, a 2 foot end table, and that's where he used to sit.
Yeah. Awesome. You guys are true entrepreneurs. You know, we get a lot of folks who will come visit our office, indie developers, things like that, during some of our meetups and things. And they'll often ask me, how do we get started? And so from a, you know, you have 8 people, you guys need to, I'm sure, pay bills, pay rent, buy food, things like that. And so from a funding perspective, can you guys talk about, you know, did you guys raise any external capital? Are you guys just self-funding this out of savings? Or how did you guys get started from the funding, like the
sure.
financial perspective?
Sure. So I think just one word of advice to anyone out there who's thinking of doing it,
mm-hmm.
don't do it. Don't do it whatsoever unless you want to, like, completely sacrifice a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, JK is also experiencing it himself as we have been. But despite my warning, if you still think this is what you're meant to do, then, you know, that is what you're meant to do. You know, there's no one or nothing that can stop you. I guess, like, when we started it, we didn't have a lot of savings. We did have minimal, but I think we were fortunate. Maybe we were privileged enough that we had families that were quite supportive and understanding.
Yeah.
That they said, fine, you know, okay, you cut back on your lifestyle and everything, but will give you enough so that you can at least pay the rent. And some of that mixed with the savings that we had. So I think we were quite fortunate in that regard. But definitely, like, it's been, 2.5 years since we started.
Right.
And we still haven't finished our game, so there's been no revenue.
Right.
I think the first 15 to 16 months, we were able to manage. We thought it's just the 4 of us. We'll build whatever we can.
Uh-huh.
We'll do the best we can, considering it's just the 4 of us.
Right.
And once we built the prototype same time last year, at around March, we did get some interest from VCs as well.
Oh, great.
So we weren't expecting that. Our initial idea was we'll go to publishers, we'll pitch the game, oh, this is going to be like amazing. But it's been so many reality checks. I think it's great, right? That's what you want to learn.
Right.
Is just don't give up. That's the only thing that can make sure you're a success. And we're still halfway in that process of just don't give up. We did finally, things did progress with one particular VC, Ventana Ventures in Udupi.
Nice.
And they have gaming heritage as well, but in a different space. They have a lot of experience with casual games, cooking games in particular for mobile. So they know F2P a lot better and all of that. But I think they saw something in us. Well, they gave us their money, so they did see some potential that, okay, you know, these guys are going to do it regardless.
Right.
Whether this happens or not, they're still going to make it. So we did get a pre-seed investment from them. So that was enough to let us dream more.
Let us a little bit longer.
Last a little bit longer. And that was, I think, it came at a very important time for us. Because our savings, again, you know, of course, we were going to do it regardless. But then we were able to hire 4 super talented, passionate, amazing guys.
Awesome.
So we can cut that out. They don't need to do it. they're also as passionate as us. And we've always had a culture saying it doesn't matter how experienced you are or what you've done in the past. But if you can make a fair argument,
right,
or you can put your ideas forward and it makes sense for the game to be better, then you know, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important part of developing the Indian game development ecosystem, right? It's just investors, and we see more money flowing into India. I think people see the opportunity, and not just in terms of the Indian market, but in terms of the Indian game development ecosystem, the people, the developers, right? So I think that's awesome to hear that you guys were able to raise some money and to, you know, scale up and get you guys past the finish line. One question I wanted to ask you, I was looking through your website. There was a quote from your website that mentioned, "Video games have played a significant role in shaping us throughout our lives." And when I hear you guys talk about the passion you have and why you wanted to start the project, I thought about this quote and wondering if you guys could elaborate a little bit more about, about that.
Well, as the person who wrote that line,
okay,
I'll just start and then hand it off to you.
Yeah,
these guys. So as I mentioned, I've been playing games since I was 5 years old, and the kind of games we play are mostly very story driven, very immersive, very impactful with meaningful themes and stories, and sort of just an idea that that there's a driving idea behind those stories, and those always resonated with us, and which is shaped the way we think, our values in life, the way we approach things, and because of which is why when we started this gaming project, we decided it was more of a passion project than a job.
Okay.
And because all of us have our own history with how video games and the stories therein have kind of given us more of a reason to push on and been there during like difficult times. It's given us joy. It's has moments of pure sadness, rage, everything. I'm sure we've all rage quitted many times while playing. The point I'm trying to make is it has deep-set emotions within these games, and we kind of resonated with that a lot, and which is why it's kind of helped us become who we are. And it's... I think I have lost my train of thought, actually. I'll actually just move it on to Yashasvi at this point, because he has a very interesting story about how video games have influenced him.
I'm quite old. I'm nearly 40. Okay. Similar story, meaning games have had a huge impact on my life from the very, like, really early days. I mean, It was a clone of the Nintendo NES that I first experienced real games. Mm. I don't know what it was. It was a knockoff. You didn't get the NES in India. I don't even remember the games. I just remember how they looked. So I don't know the names. Those had a huge impact. Then I remember playing Wolfenstein 3D first time. My God, that was like insane. I couldn't understand what is this 3D game. It's very interesting. Early 90s. Then, you know, Doom. Then Half-Life had a huge impact. The Half-Life 1, when it came out. Then, of course, we had the Warcraft universe, World of Warcraft and all that. So those were like the important games that had a huge impact on my career choice or whatever, right?
Yeah.
The things that I was really passionate about. The first, and I used to play a lot of Counter-Strike. Early days, I used to be part of this, what do you call
gaming
it?
Clan.
Gaming clan, sorry. Yeah. I'm not getting the word. So we participated in events like World's Cyber Games. And back then, we wanted to do something, and a bunch of us, right? We wanted to do something on the lines of Cyber Athlete Professional League in India. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it still exists.
90s esports organization.
I don't know when it started, but this was in early 2000. This was 2003 sometime. So the bunch of guys here, I got acquainted to. They started this thing called Indian Pro League, IPL.
Okay.
So that it didn't last a you know very long, but I think year and a half, which was a esports venture. So I just wanted to be part of it. I just wanted to play games all my life. I didn't want to do anything else. So that's where it started. But that didn't really work out. And there's a gap of many years. And after that, we joined this place called IGA. And no,
the rest you guys
of it. Yeah. And just continued from there.
I was wondering, you know, we talked about how there's more investors in India. You guys are the beneficiaries of a venture investment. I think that if we look at the Indian game development ecosystem, I was hoping we could touch upon that a little bit more. So you guys are still relatively new, kind of building your studio, but when you think about the Indian game development ecosystem, when you talk to other game developers, how would you characterize the current state of game development here? And where do you think the industry is headed? Or what would you say you're looking forward to from the Indian game development ecosystem?
Right. I think within India, because we skipped a whole generation of technology, I think as soon as Jio came in, and then mobile games and mobile data itself was a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. Everyone could afford it. Suddenly, the Indian population was accessible. And I think with casual games and especially with mobile games, I think India came in at the right moment. And then there's so many like amazing studios doing stuff for the whole world.
Sure.
So they are in sync, I suppose, with what's going on with the rest of the industry. But I think when it comes to hardcore games that... you know, the type of games that we're trying to build and we're talking about, it's still only a handful of companies. At least it's better than 4 or 5 years ago when I think it was maybe one or two companies that really were trying.
Yeah.
It's great to see a lot more studios that we regularly interact with. It's amazing to see how they're trying to find a market and then try to find something new that they can build that will cater to that market.
Yeah.
And I think in general, we have all the access now due to the internet and due to, you know, a lot of people that are coming into the industry who have prior experience but are coming into the Indian industry to kind of help us with capital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that support, that attention is definitely coming through, perhaps even through regulatory systems at a government level.
Yeah.
Things are moving, maybe not fast enough to help someone like us today, but I think for the new wave of studios that are going to be formed in the next couple of years, they're all going to be at the right place at the right time. Perhaps we still feel we're a little bit early, but I think we got tired of waiting anyway. We just thought, okay, fine, we have to do it ourselves. And I think there are 10, 15 other studios out there also who are like, this is more passion driven. Because there is no guarantee of commercial stability or success. Mm-hmm. But in the off chance that it does happen well, then you know you've kind of created a path for yourself.
Right.
So I think what we are most looking forward to are these small teams, mm-hmm. 1 or 2 person teams that are, you know, also I guess optimistic like us and try to build that, put the game out there. If it fails, learn from it. If it succeeds, build on it. And then slowly over time, perhaps, you know, maybe in 5 to 10 years, we'll see enough studios here who also figure out. Because there's a very unique proposition, I think, by making Indian-themed content.
Mm-hmm.
Because we couldn't wrap our head around how that would, how can you take an international type of experience and then add it, like you have to, like, you know, mix it with the right synergy so it shows up well. But I'm sure there are other studios out there that are trying to figure it out, and we're definitely curious to see how that goes.
Okay.
So I think there are some really cool, interesting things that people are trying in India. It's all headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that is the great part. I don't think there has ever been a time before where Indian gamers were playing so many games from the world, like around the world.
Yeah.
So it's great to see, and hopefully, you know, there are more studios that make games that people here can play.
And maybe if we were to like characterize more specifically, when you think about an Indian game development studio, in terms of specific challenges for you as an Indian game developer, and maybe also some of the challenges and the strengths, right? And we were kind of talking before we started recording about how some of the best developers actually, well, they'll jump to like the US or Canada or whatever, but and so like sometimes it's like retaining critical talent, but from your perspective, when it comes to this specific, again, challenges of the Indian game development studio and then the strengths or what you would be looking forward to, could you guys talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I think talent is one. It's really difficult to find talent, especially if you're an indie studio who's bootstrapped, because you need a lot of money to hire good talent.
Yeah.
It's a known problem. So especially for us, we have to make sure we fill the gaps first, and we can't address certain things like, you know, we need additional help with certain resource. We can't do that unless we have more funding.
Right.
So we are trying to fill in the gaps. That's what we're trying to do initially, because even now, even with funding, it's limited funding. It's not a lot.
Sure.
So that is one. Funding and I think talent pool, I think, are the biggest issues that I see, you know, when you're trying to start a studio here. Then again, there are the certain things which are good, because, you know, you can have really passionate, talented people who will come in, you know, for a lesser pay,
check,
because they're really passionate. They want to get, they have the same passion as you, or they want to make the same sorts of games. So they will not look elsewhere. They'll come in and they'll, you know, be the driving force alongside you. So that's a good part. So I think the four employees that we have that real passion, right? That gives you that energy, even though we're here for so many years, this new energy that comes in kind of boosts and pushes the game a lot further. I think those are two main challenges.
I think the other challenge is the chicken or the egg problem. If there were studios in India,
mm-hmm.
that were making hardcore games, perhaps people like us would have gotten a job, worked there for a while, and then we're like, oh, this is what it takes to make a game for the world. The depth of the systems, how good does it have to be to succeed at that level?
Yeah,
I think you make a strong point. I mean, I think that's one of the challenges I faced as well with our studio, is that some people join and they think they know what good is. But, you know, I'm an old guy. I've been publishing. I've visited 40 studios at the minimum around the world. So I kind of know what good looks like to be world class, but I do think like more of that understanding of, is how I'm doing things good enough or not? I think that knowledge is not yet here, but hopefully it can get here. But Mahesh, did you have any thoughts?
No. Apart from the fact that, it's growing industry, so there's still a lot of pain points with respect to that, like you already touched on talent. But in terms of the understanding of what a game studio makes is kind of different in India as compared to, let's say, the global scene. So people, it's still more of like a casual, hyper-casual sort of environment. The understanding of it being a game studio rather than a gaming corporate or a business is the definition is kind of like,
yeah, it's a more creative
yeah.
process than like a numbers.
Yeah, so people, at least in the Indian scene, seem to view gaming as more of a business offering. And I think it would help the industry as a whole if people viewed it more as a sort of a creative sort of aspect.
I think for a company like us, I think it's also a responsibility for us to create that ecosystem.
Exactly.
I mean, right? I mean, for newer guys who just don't see an opportunity here, but they really want to like do, you know, work on some hardcore games. We want to help create that ecosystem. And we are ourselves learning how to do it.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at games like, you know, small studios out there, like Supergiant Games. The amount of polish that goes into making a game like that is just incredible. It's just, I mean, we've seen their NoClip documentaries and, you know, their interviews. It's just incredible the amount of polish that goes. We're trying our best to do whatever we can our demo, so we're constantly patching, you know, adding more updates, adding more polish, but there's so much work.
To go back to the point that you were making, right?
Yeah.
What is good?
Right.
It has so many definitions.
Yes.
When you say you want to be the best, do you really mean the best? Or the acceptable best,
right.
Or the okay, fine, compromise best.
Yeah. There's a global best, and then there's a your version
yeah.
of the best.
Yeah, right.
So kind of have to, and add to that point of challenges that game studios and this industry in general faces is visibility.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I started out as a career, I never even thought of going into gaming as a viable job option. That just didn't occur to me. Because that's while I played a lot of games, it just didn't occur to me that this is a viable career option, because you don't hear about games made in India or anything else. So you just assume that it's outside of the country. But that I think is kind of changing now. And that's a sort of a challenge that we're still in the phase of transition. So I think that's probably the main challenge that we're overcoming.
Okay, so we've talked about kind of challenges more generally in terms of the Indian games ecosystem, but I wanted to see about you guys specifically in terms of your challenges. Would you say they're the same as the challenges that we have been discussing, or what were like the top, you know, one or two challenges for you guys specifically?
Right. So the one we spoke about earlier is the shorter version.
Okay.
I think the main issue for all of us is we've never made a game before.
Mm.
Everything starts from there.
Right.
There are some good things, but mostly it was a challenge.
Right.
I think, you know, we had some 3D background, and of course we had some experience with game engines.
Right.
And we know what good games are.
Right.
That's it. The rest of it, I think, has been try it. It might work. Learn whatever you can online, and then try to present it, try to create this, you know, it's like a collective vision of the game.
Right.
So we don't have a game designer.
Okay.
So we split the responsibility amongst, you know, the team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something, that is one of the things. I think we've never done any of this. I think game writing, there's so many challenges,
that's
even right. with building the systems. How do you figure it out? How do you figure out the technical challenges, the optimization
right.
challenges? How do you run? As we are saying, yes, it's a creative studio and all that, it's still, what about the day-to-day operations?
Right.
You know, how is money going to be managed? How do we prioritize where it has to be used? I think we YOLO'd it. I think to
yeah.
start a studio, I think you have to be blindly optimistic.
Right.
I think otherwise, if you try to be logical, I think
yeah,
there's no
sense.
Way,
no.
There's no way you're going
yeah, to I mean. Where we started, where we are, is
yeah.
just incredible. When we started, all narrative content, all design, you know, sharing design and production, programming, and art, the other core. We haven't had it figured out.
Yeah.
What one person team? You're four people.
Four people in make a game, right? Yeah. Downloaded, because we didn't know animation, one of the key gaps that we had. So we downloaded animations from a library, like Mixamo, purchased some packs, blah, blah, blah. Then it was not, it didn't really work out. I mean, we could do, like, create few enemies because they're all humanoid. We just do humanoids,
sure.
enemies, and, you know, characters. But it was really, wasn't really working, right? But once you got our animator, everything changed. I mean, your vision changes drastically when you have that gap addressed. I mean, I'm just talking about one gap here. So just because of that, we could imagine really crazy bosses, enemies, and designs,
right?
You could just push the boundaries. When we look at our prototype, which we are very happy when we showed people last year.
You would get goosebumps.
Oh, like,
trailer.
Oh my God.
Now we look at it, we cringe.
So this goes back to talking about, that was our version of the best that we thought.
Right.
And then now when we look back, we're like, no. Oh my God.
And the worst part is, you know, we send it out to publishers. They're polite enough, many of them, to respond saying that, no, not a right fit, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, why?
It doesn't make sense.
Now we're like, it makes total sense. And that also, talking back to challenges, is we have all played a lot of games. Like, some of the best games, we get our hands on it. We know what makes, like, we know a good game or a great game when we play it, but designing one, like, we make so many mistakes. Well, it's not the same. It's not a transferable skill at
all.
No,
it does not.
That was a challenge, definitely, that we learned. That just because we play great games and know what a great game looks like doesn't mean that we can
And I think one more thing we've actively done and we're not afraid to do is scrap everything.
Okay.
Even if it's months of work, if we have to do it from scratch, we will do it from scratch.
I love
and we've done
from
it.
Scratch. Yeah.
And we've done it so many times. We've done it a lot of times.
Yes.
Which is good. I mean, right now it's in a great shape. At least we think so.
It's the current best.
I thought maybe we could also talk about sort of the company strategy. Now, obviously, when we generally think about India, we think about a lot of mobile gamers, not necessarily many PC gamers. You guys mentioned that you started off in Match 3 and now you're a Souls-like action platformer game. So could you walk us through like how did you guys wind up in terms of building for PC? And then I assume you're going for a global market rather than focusing on the Indian market. And then the specific genre and other parts of, like, when you think from a strategic perspective, how did you kind of arrive at the different parts of the company strategy?
Sure. So I think it started from what did we want to be 10 years down the line. I think that was always the driving force for what we should do today.
Okay.
Is what we want to be then. Of course, eventually we wanted to be like this studio that maybe 50-60% studio who can make a game that has 30-40 hours of content, a lot of replayability. It's an action game, but it also has a lot of the narrative flavor. There's enough that a player can get lost in. That was the whole idea.
Okay.
And then we thought, okay, for us to be able to do that with the third or the fourth game, what do we need to do before that? Because we needed to quickly learn, make mistakes, fail, learn, and then get better at it so that you can then learn something else. We realized we had to learn a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So we just individually just kind of started to like figure that out. So it started out as a Match 3. Then it was a side-scroller thing with just one button input where it's just like a jetpack side-scroller game.
Yeah.
And this I'm talking about in months. That we'd be like, oh, this is totally possible. We can do this. And then once, you know, we had Mahesh join, we got more greedy. So suddenly we have a guy who's passionate about games, who loves fantasy fiction, who wants to express, who wants to build a world from his own mind that he's able to, like, you know, put it in a game that someone can, like, start absorbing it. So, yeah.
That reminds me. So initially, we used to write stories. I mean, what the game should be.
Yeah.
It used to be a one pager,
yeah.
Right? Then he comes. Now we have hundreds of pages. I mean, it's gone from like a one pager to like a novel, I guess.
So it kind of sounds like the way that the game manifested is really around discovery, you guys iterating, you guys also depending on who you have, your people.
Yeah.
So we have these skills, we have these capabilities, let's see what we can do within the constraints of what we have. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that has always kept pushing us. And as soon as we got the investment,
yeah.
suddenly, you know, we went up like degrees of
right.
Now
you
difference.
Can do more. Your
yeah.
opportunities
exactly.
expanded.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It gave a validation that we're not crazy people.
Right.
That, okay, there is a game here that could do something well.
Right.
We got the four people. We moved into an actual office space.
Mm-hmm.
That also put enough pressure on us saying, now you've got to make sure the game is
right.
good. It's not just the four of us.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work out, whatever, we can leave. Now we have people we need to think about.
Right.
But at the same time, how do we... Because we always felt we never got the chance when we were younger, when we had started out, where someone was looking out for us, thinking,
right.
you know, this is what you should do, you should push yourself to be the best that you can.
Right.
But I think we want to help in whatever way that we can to help shape other people's career. And we know we benefit.
Right.
The more they grow, the more ownership they take, the more they contribute positively. The studio is, you know, the strength of the studio is the people, and the game is a lot better.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about the game itself, Winds of Arcana, Ruination, Souls-like action platformer, as we mentioned. So when you guys think about the game, you know, what is the differentiation? Why do you think people are going to play this game? Can you guys talk a little bit more about the game itself?
Yeah, sure. So a little bit of a preface
mm-hmm.
is we decided to go with the Souls-like genre, which was sort of a double-edged sword because it's a niche genre. But the timing was sort of convenient, especially with the release of Elden Ring, which became such a huge critical success in the gaming sphere, like the global gaming sphere in general, which got the whole Souls name a bit more accessible. And people became a bit more accepting of a difficult sort of game. So we played it. We wanted to make something like that. And but then the question that you asked is, what makes it different? We can't just make a difficult game and expect people to play it just because it's a Souls-like and just because
sure.
it's trending. So we play a lot of different games. Like I play a bunch of 4Xs, strategy, CRPGs. One of our concept artists plays card collectible games. So we have a diverse sort of... player base within our company itself.
Mm-hmm.
So due to that, we had like a knowledge pool of different kind of things that work in a gaming context. So we tried to understand what exactly works to get people coming back to play a game. So one thing is replayability. If you can come back and play and still feels fresh, then it's probably a good game and it's going to work. And the trick was to find something that was replayable without it just being
number-driven.
Exactly. It shouldn't be predictable. So we decided to create something called this rune shard system to tie it to our combat. So basically, you find these things called the rune shards in the game. And each one changes all your abilities. So it's basically like a deep playstyle customization item. And we have like 6 or 7 of these. We can't design too many of those because they change everything about the way you play. And so we've only given enough resources in one playthrough to get only a few of them. And we also have 3 different weapons which also change in accordance with the items. So in that sort of permutation and combination, it's still fresh enough that you can play the game again with like different weapons and shards and sort of have your own play style, try different things. And then launching the Colosseum sort of thing, like basically an arena. So it's arena is essentially like a place where you can just go through a gauntlet of challenges through boss fights and platforming. And we found that we design enemies and bosses relatively fast, faster than we thought at least. So that kind of became a good place to like give more replayability for the player. So we can, as endgame content and DLC content, we can push in a lot of enemies and bosses, and people can
try out all their play styles repeatedly. So in that sense, we wanted to have combat as the central tenet of our game, keep that fresh, and to keep the immersion intact, we have a very like story driven sort of game, so we could have gone with no voice acting, but we thought for immersion's sake, again, it all adds in when there's a world that you can interact with and it interacts back with you. So we went with voice acting as well, fully voice acted. There's a lot of lore you can find. There's a bunch of secrets that you may discover in one playthrough or you may not ever discover it, no matter X number of playthroughs. So we tried to create systems and design mechanics and levels and the game itself so that people can keep replaying it. And I think that's what we're hoping that will set our game apart.
Just to add to that, just taking a step back, I think till end of Jan, we are a mobile game.
Okay.
We were.
Yeah.
And it was optimized really well for the mobile, and we showed it at GDC.
IGDC, not GDC. Sorry. No.
India GDC. Yeah.
Right? And it was running smoothly at 60 frames per second on a mid-range device, you know, with everything happening. It was really running well. That was because we are influenced by this game called Grim Valor on mobile. So that was a Souls-like game. That did really well. I mean, compared to, and for a premium game, it did really well on the mobile. So for us, that was the main driving factor. Apart from all the PC influences we had, that was the main driving factor, I feel.
That was the point.
Yeah.
Okay, this can work.
And there are not many on the mobile store, right? I mean, you could find one or two of these, and we thought, okay, there's an opportunity. We should do that. But later we figured out it's better if we do PC first, then do address mobile market for a game like this. Okay. And
even from due to various pricing strategies, all of that, it's always easier to go down the platforms or do a simultaneous release than to try to do the other way around. Start from mobile and then try to port it. Because I guess PC gamers and console gamers don't identify that much with mobile gamers. Most of mobile gamers don't even identify themselves as gamers, which in itself is like, you know, that completely different audiences. So we thought we'll do this, it becomes easier. And this helps us in the long-term vision of becoming a PC console developer.
Yes. In terms of marketing also, it made sense because like you said, mobile gamers don't necessarily consider themselves gamers, but PC gamers or console gamers do. So, for example, PC or console gamers don't look at mobile games and think, oh, I hope that game comes to PC or console. But mobile gamers will look at a PC and console game and think, oh, yeah, I really hope that game comes to ports to mobile or something.
And in many cases, they play on the PC and console first, and then they also like to play the port.
Recently, Dead Cells did a fantastic job, right? When they came to mobile, they're huge. I mean, they're really huge.
They're a premium game, no demo, nothing, and they recently successfully sold 5 million copies just on mobile.
Nice.
So we're like, okay, you know what, maybe we're in the direction.
And when in terms of the current state of the game, so there's a demo on Steam, but could you talk about the launch plans, where you guys are now in terms of development, when a full launch will occur on the PC, and then you mentioned you'll also go to mobile, so maybe plans around that as well.
Sure. So we are currently, I guess, in beta. What do you call this?
I think it's an advanced demo.
Advanced demo. Yes, I mean, the demo is out on Steam. So we essentially have a vertical slice that is there. But
it's longer than, the amount of content is more than an average demo.
Okay.
For an average player, it will take at least 4 to 5 hours to finish the demo. I mean, it's like it's as big as many full games, the demo itself.
Yeah.
It's just one biome. So
now it's just there's one biome. We plan to have six or seven.
Okay.
So that you can multiply by 3 or 4 hours.
We thought if we do a 10 to 12 hour game, that would be like a great achievement for a first game, considering we've never done any of this before. But I think as things stand, if we do everything right, perhaps it's going to easily exceed 20 to 22 hours for the first playthrough. But everything we're designing, keeping in mind, if you enjoy playing the game once, there should be enough hooks that you try new game plus, but then you try different things. So more than what meets the eye is what we're going for in our content, which is what has taken us so long to build the workflow. He was mentioning about how, you know, for enemies, we are pretty fast. I think the first enemy we created in the latest iteration, I think it took us like maybe 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks trying to get all the workflows in place.
Okay.
But now I think within 7 working days, we're able to build from an idea of an enemy to a playable version of the enemy.
Yeah, idea to fully animated 3D model.
So workflows, building these interpersonal workflows between different team members, I think that was very key.
Yeah.
And that was like a challenge for us as well.
And we missed pre-production, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because we were trying to figure out stuff on our own. We didn't have the team. So we straight went into production. So pre-production and production is happening at the same time.
Sure.
So
that happens more often than you think.
Okay. Okay, that's good to know.
And recently I was re-watching the NoCube documentaries of Supergiant Games.
Okay.
I think it was Transistor. They talk about, they had a pre-production cycle of 18 to 20 months.
Mm-hmm.
And production of just 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was like, wow. I mean,
they sharpened that axe. Like,
and it's such a great game. Right? I mean, their games are just brilliant. So, like, wow, I mean, I wish we can get there someday, like, where you have solid pre-production time and you can plan out stuff. And yeah, maybe in the next game it might happen.
Maybe. But according
yeah.
to Joe, I don't think so.
Sometimes happens.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of launch, so we're in demo now. We're planning to go into this thing called Steam Next Fest, which showcases demos of upcoming games.
Yeah.
In October this year, and then maybe early access or a full launch soon after that. So we're planning to go into like 1.0, like Q1 2024. That's the plan at the release.
For PC?
For PC.
And then for console. So that's another thing, is we're trying to constantly learn. We are in the process of getting the dev kits for the other consoles, which in itself is an entirely different new process. But I think we've got a good handle on it. And now we're soon going to start testing, making sure all the workflows are in place. We don't want to keep working on the PC version. And once it's done, once it's stable, which is, I don't know how long, then we open up the dev kits and like, how does this thing work?
Yeah,
so,
we want to start do that as early as
yeah.
possible.
And then, so around May or June of next year, release all the ports. We want to make all the mistakes with the PC launch. And make sure everything is stable, and then it's just a clean port. We had people offering to do the ports for us, but then internally it made more sense. We learn how to do it ourselves,
right.
So that for the next game we know how to build it right.
Right.
So that's just a better workflow than having to have someone else clean up your messes,
right.
Clean it yourself. So we're going to do that, and after that we're going to have mobile. At the same time, we also want to make sure that DLC, like something we are committed to as a studio that has never made a game before, is we are willing to take any and all feedback, any and all constructive criticism, and we are willing to put our, we're ready to do whatever it takes to keep making it better.
Okay.
It may not be there today, but I think it's, for us, what we found is a constant cycle. Keep getting new feedback, see how that makes sense, keep trying to improve. Hopefully next time when we design things, we get it right. So that's the thing.
So John, I have one last question for you. And really this is about for you guys. And certainly I think you had mentioned that the one thing you wanted to do is to see a game through from concept to launch. And it sounds like you guys are going to get there. But when you think about success for yourself, whether it's success for the game or success for the company, whether it's financially or otherwise, how would you define that success for Brood Games?
They're both kind of hand in hand. The success for the game would... there is a way to quantify it, but qualitatively, I think if we make a game that, basically we want to make a game that we love to play.
Mm-hmm.
That was always the mantra when we started anyway. And hopefully other players will also resonate with that. In terms of success, I can just throw a number out there. Let's say if we do, let's say 10,000 copies in only on PC. Sorry, on PC and console for the lifetime of the game. I think that would be a good metric for success for a first game by an indie studio that's never made a game before. I think that would be a pretty good success metric.
Would help keep the lights.
I think that's
yeah.
When you talk about success, there's another way to look at it as make enough money to make your second game with all the people and a few additional resources. If you make that minimum amount, I think we'll be happy. At least till you finish our second game.
Consider it a success.
Yeah, definitely. Right?
Yeah.
Like minimum.
If it can let us start making the next game, I think we can consider it a success.
Okay. Well, great. Well, Prashant, Mahesh, Yashashvi, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's great to see more indie developers and the game development ecosystem flourish here in India. So definitely appreciate your time. And thank you again for sharing your story.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was fun.